Hi, welcome to today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You're with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman, and we have a special Seahawks travel to Wembley Stadium show. We have a special play action show. There's a lot to talk about today. It's going to be a fun show. We're going to keep the positivity going. We're on the positivity train. It's not stopping. But before we get this train going, we're going to do a quick intro. I am Grant Goldberg. I'm the co-host of this Locked On Seahawks podcast, and I do social media and graphic design for SB Nation's Lakers site. Spike is a writer with The Stranger, and you can find our podcast if this is your first time listening. You don't usually listen to it, you know, wherever you're listening to it now. You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and really basically wherever you listen to podcasts. So it's everywhere. You can find it anywhere. But we have a great show for you today. Spike, how's it going?
It's going fine. I don't know. It's going fine. You know, we've got Russell Wilson looking fine, which I'm into. I'm into that life. I'm into Russell Wilson. I'm into Drew Brees and the Saints getting flagged for celebrating breaking the passing yard record. Which is technically a taunting, not an excessive celebration penalty, but it's still maybe the funniest penalty in the history of the NFL. So, you know, I'm having a good morning learning about all the nonsense that the NFL is up to, as always.
That's not even like a taunting penalty or an excessive celebration. That's a flexing penalty. I mean,
the league had arranged for them to stop the game, and they called a taunting penalty on the receiver. I love that. It's also, Tre'Quan Smith went off last night. I was like, is this Torrey Smith? What is happening?
Yeah, the refs are starting their own mini rebellion against the league, it seems. So that's something to keep tabs on throughout the rest of the year. But yeah,
stop militarizing the refs. Come on, America.
The refs are not your pawns. But yeah, really just shout out to Drew Brees, because like I feel like he's probably one of the most underrated athletes probably in any sport, you know, when you look at all time and just historically great performances. You know, you look back at his career, and these Saints teams maybe haven't been as competitive as the Patriots throughout Tom Brady's career, but you know, Drew Brees has been the lifeblood of that team along with Sean Payton. But to be that consistent at the age that he's at right now, that says something. And He's no doubt Hall of Famer. And
oh yeah, I mean yeah. It's like a super Hall of Famer.
Yeah, question.
You're too young to remember, but like he was amazing on the Chargers.
Yeah.
Back in the day with Norv Turner. And like, man, like dude is unbelievable, and it's only because he was next to Brady and Manning that there's even any question about his legacy. And it's insane. He's never won an MVP. To me, he's sort of like Dirk Nowitzki level.
Yeah.
And that, you know, just that longevity, constant scoring, constant ability. And then, like, somehow it's like you look around one day and you're like, wait, is this guy a top 12 all-time player? And I think it's similar with Brady's, where you're like, oh, is this guy a top, like, 5 all-time quarterback? And, like, maybe. I mean, just an incredible player. Yeah, I don't know. It's cool. To see him get a moment of his due. Although if Tom Brady had broken that record, they would have like broken into local news coverages nationwide to show us the celebration. But you know, hey, whatever. Drew Brees, underrated, amazing, genius. Not too much you could say. The prototype for Russell Wilson, also.
Right.
So
yeah, if Tom Brady had broken, you know, any type of significant record that Brees has, there'd just be a storming of the field, a sea of red hats, and it'd just be a mess. But we'll change the subject, and we'll switch it to the team that we actually talk about, and that's the Seattle Seahawks. And they're traveling to London this week. They're traveling after practice on Wednesday. It's pretty standard. Maybe teams always travel earlier overseas than, you know, maybe a division game or any game they're traveling to. But the Raiders are actually traveling later. They're traveling on Thursday. And John Gruden is dreading the thought of flying all the way to London. He's said as much as, you know, he hopes he doesn't get vertigo. He's had vertigo from flying to Belarus to watch his powerlifting son in a competition. And he said he had vertigo for a month. He was throwing up and he couldn't even lay down sometimes. So, yeah, John Gruden, really afraid of this London trip.
I guess that's good for the Seahawks. I don't know, man. I don't care for John Gruden. I don't want that to taint. Like, if he's actually getting vertigo from this, I don't want to make fun of him. So I'm going to wait until we find out that he didn't get vertigo before I make fun of him. But if he does not get vertigo, my official take on this is John Gruden is a huge baby. I don't like this Raiders team at all. Like, all the pieces that were, like, cool and good about this team 2 years ago have either withered up or are gone. Like, Amari Cooper is not developing the way we hoped he would. Derek Carr is not taking steps forward. Gruden's there instead of Jack Del Rio. I mean, Marshawn is still Marshawn, so that's the one element.
Bruce,
but
too.
Even that is going to die as the team moves on. Bruce, but they're going to cut Bruce, maybe. And Khalil Mack's obviously gone. I mean, and they're just boring. Like, I don't care for anything about this Raiders team, this Raiders philosophy. The idea that you pay John Gruden all that money, but you can't afford to break the bank for Khalil Mack. Everything about it is gross. I don't like it. I don't like the Raiders either. I mean, they're a historical rival with the Seahawks, much like the Broncos are. And so I like that I don't like them a little bit. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is comfortable. This is natural for me. Again, before you were born, Grant, they were in the same division.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, I kid.
You keep going back to that well. It's okay. It's, you know, it's right there for the taking. I don't mind, honestly. But, yeah. You know, okay.
But I just want to say that John Gruden's a baby.
Yeah, and that's fair. John Gruden, for as much as he's made of, you know, well, like, from his start with, you know, I'm talking about, like, after he, you know, left coaching, he started at ESPN, and everybody loved John Gruden, the personality, because they loved John Gruden, the coach, because it was a completely different style of football. Rosters were totally different. Mike Allstott was his favorite player. But, you know, the game shifted, and a lot of the times with these announcers or these former players or former coaches, their mindset stays in their era of coaching, and football is supposed to be played in their point of view.
Yeah.
And we've seen John Gruden kind of stay in that, you know, we're going to play my way. We're not going to acknowledge these, you know, these change of the times. And so this has made my favorite storyline to follow with the Raiders, Khalil Mack outpacing them in counting stats in some categories, like sacks and forced fumbles.
Those categories don't matter, though.
They don't matter. And so, like the Raiders, they don't matter. And it's just fun to watch and fun to make fun of, honestly. And this is us talking about a team that hired Brian Schottenheimer.
Oh, sorry. You said Mike Allstott. I'm just like, what happened to Warrick Dunn?
Yeah.
Where's Warrick? You don't hear about Warrick Dunn anymore. God, it's like Deadspin's remember those guys. Like, late 90s running backs. Like, where's Steven Davis these days? I guess we probably could find Clinton Portis if we looked hard enough. But, like, there's so many, like, late 90s running back. And I'm realizing as I say this, like, it's probably horrible. Like, I probably don't want to know where they are, which is, like, dealing with depression from brain injuries from repeated contact. Great sport we got here.
No. Warrick Dunn, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, famously has built, like, over 1,000 houses.
What?
And, like, is okay in this USA Today article from a couple years ago, it says he's in his 19 years of helping single parents own homes.
What? Amazing. Warrick Dunn.
Not 1,000 houses, sorry. Maybe 153, but still is incredible.
Shout out to Warrick Dunn. What a hero. Who knew? I didn't know. I was over here worrying he was going to something bad had happened.
Yeah.
To help the community. I love this. This is great news.
It's great. I remember hearing about it a few years ago, and I just wanted to make sure, so I had to type in Warwick Dunn houses on Google, and sure enough, it came up. And yeah, that's awesome. You don't hear about Warwick Dunn all that often, but yeah, I guess it's not for good reason. He's doing great work. It's sort of like Caron Butler in the NBA has, you know, started to build a lot apartment complexes in Minnesota for, you know, families that can't afford housing. So yeah, just great situation, great things that people are doing after their respective sport careers have ended. But yeah, I think Warwick Dunn being a really great person is a great way to end this segment, and we'll come back.
I love that this is our news segment of the day. It's like Warwick Dunn's a good person. The reason that's true is because no one on the Seahawks got hurt for once, and how great is that, that we don't have to spend the beginning of Tuesday debating how badly injured someone is. So shouts to Warwick Dunn, shouts to no injuries. What a great beginning to a Tuesday.
Yep, I can't say it better myself. So we'll come back with more great content on the Locked On Seahawks podcast. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. The Seahawks travel to Wembley Stadium to face the Oakland Raiders. They're going to play in London, and it's probably going to be a doozy. It's probably going to be a terribly tough game to pick. And so you know where you have to go to get the best line on this game and see the odds for it. It's mybookie.ag. They've got a really great, easy website to navigate, whether you're on mobile or desktop. They have really quick payouts because it's important to get your money. And they have live in-game betting, so you see this game shifting towards maybe one team and you want to put some money on it. You're able to do that with MyBookie. And, you know, if you've used MyBookie before, they have a great offer for you. They have a great offer for anybody that wants to use it. And if you put $100 down, you get a free $25 to play with, courtesy of MyBookie. All you have to do is use the promo code LOCKEDON25 to receive $25 free to play with on top of deposits of $100 or more. So take that. Take the free money and put it on the Seahawks if you think they're going to whoop the Raiders on Sunday. You know, be confident in your team. Be confident in where you choose to put your sports bet on, and that's mybookie.ag. So again, use the promo code LOCKEDON25 to receive $25 on top of deposits of $100 or more. And new users of MyBookie can get their first deposit matched dollar for dollar on their first visit. So everybody's winning. Everybody's getting free money. It's mybookie.ag, LOCKEDON25. You play, you win, you get paid. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are still with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman, and we're going to talk about running the ball. Oh, faked out. We're not going to talk about running. We're going to talk about the play action. It was a run fake. We're going to talk about throwing the ball after faking the ball to a runner. Yeah, play action. We're here. We're talking about it because the Seahawks are doing it, and it is wonderful. Russell Wilson's such a great play action quarterback. He's so great in the zone read, and we're going to talk about both things. But Spike, I know you were excited to talk about the play action because we've been waiting all season for them to unleash it.
Yeah, before coming into week five, the Seahawks were running play action on a little under 25% of their passing downs. And that's not nearly enough in the modern NFL. We know that play action is effective sort of regardless how good your running game is. The Seahawks running game is pretty effective right now, so play action is even more effective. Even if you believe you need a good running game to be effective in the play action game, the Seahawks now have a good running game, so they got to be using play action, especially given how good we know Russell Wilson is with ball fakes. And it took through 4 weeks, but, and I can't believe I'm saying this, credit to Brian Schottenheimer for evolving what he's doing, for busting out play action on over 50% of the passing downs on Sunday. Now, I hope this wasn't just because they were sort of throwing the kitchen sink at the Rams. This should be the status quo for this offense. And you could see suddenly Russell Wilson was decent under pressure. Now, is that exclusively the play action? I don't know for sure, because the way that the Rams bring pressure is obviously from the interior with Donald and Sue rather than from the outside, the way that the Bears and the Broncos were sort of killing us with Khalil Mack and Von Miller. That said, under pressure, Russell Wilson was back to looking like Russell Wilson. He was improvising. He was hitting guys. I believe he was 7-for-9 under pressure this week after posting like disastrous passer ratings in the teens and like 30s over the previous few weeks. So you're talking about a genuine step forward for this offense by doing what we know Russell Wilson does well, which is ball fakes and then using those ball fakes to freeze the defense and be able to extend plays. We saw him improvise. We saw him hit guys moving outside the pocket. Again, you know, it's nice that the pocket wasn't collapsing from the outside, but still, it looked like Russell Wilson on Sunday, and the numbers bear that out. This was a vintage Russell Wilson performance. It was a vintage game plan from the Seahawks, and it worked, and it was really good. And again, I hope that we don't start going away from this again to save it for big teams, because that is how a team ends up playing down to its opposition. And I'm afraid that that could happen with the Seahawks. Hopefully it does not, because this is a game plan that I can tolerate going forward. Also, just so we don't like overpraise Brian Schottenheimer, his play calling down the stretch was a disaster. But his game plan was not a disaster. And you know, if we're gonna criticize guys on here, even if we don't like them, they do something good, we got to at least be like, oh, it wasn't a disaster. So, hey, credit to everybody, but mostly credit to Russell Wilson for being awesome on Sunday.
Yeah, he was incredible. And I think, you know, a product of the great game plan was that it was the Brian Schottenheimer revenge game.
Yep.
He got up to play the Rams. No, but yeah, credit where credit is due. He definitely, I mean, I definitely think that it took an effective running game to give him the confidence in calling these play fakes. But I'm just glad that they did it. And we saw what we knew Russell Wilson was capable of, and what we knew other players on this offense were capable of with this play action. We saw it last year, most notably against the Houston Texans. That's what kept them in the game and ultimately won the game for them. But I think you made a great point about the team playing down to the competition. I don't think the Rams played down to the Seahawks competition. I think the Seahawks met the level of competition with the Rams. And you know, you see a team like the Rams, they don't play down to a team because they are out to run their offense the way they run it every week, consistently with great play design. And you know, they're going for these first downs. They're not setting up third and six. They're going for first downs on every play. And we saw the Seahawks with their efficiency on third down. That's because of how good their running game has been and them using play action. But there was a lot less sweating out whether the Seahawks were going to go three and out. There's a lot less sweating out if a drive was going to fizzle out early in its life. And I a lot of that's credit to the play action. They are stretching the Rams. Well, they stretch the Rams horizontally, vertically, and you know, they maintained a great pocket. They gave Russell Wilson time to throw. And you know, that comes with the defense respecting the running game, but ultimately that's on Russell Wilson and having an effective play fake, and he's always been able to do that. And I think that, you know, with this great play action performance on Sunday, you know, the team will see that and say, okay, that's effective. We know the running game can be effective, but we need to get this play action game going and keep, you know, keep it firing on all cylinders against these other opponents, not just the Rams. And you know, we saw a lot of zone read on Sunday, and Pete Carroll said that Russell Wilson didn't pull it down a lot because he was making the right reads. And you know, maybe I'll have to watch the all 22 angles on these, but it looked like Russell Wilson could pull some of these down and keep the defense honest in another respect. And if Russell Wilson's pulling these down and he's getting these first downs, that's just another thing that a defense is going to have to worry about. And I think that when Russell Wilson starts doing that, we're going to see another level of this Seahawks offense, not just the play action, but just another element, another thing they can work in to make them that much more dynamic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, obviously we want to see Russ pull the ball down, but I think it was a good. I mean, it didn't end up being a particularly effective game plan from Wade Phillips, but it felt like Wade Phillips did not want that to happen. That is not how they wanted to lose.
Yeah.
And we were able to beat them another way. And that's really exciting because I think you made a great point about how the Rams are true to themselves. It's something Pete Carroll said in the run-up to the game, and it's a very Pete Carroll way to look at Sean McVay's success, but saying, like, he stays true to his philosophy offensively consistently, regardless of what else is happening. I think it's very true with the Rams, and I don't think it's true about the Seahawks on the offensive side of the ball. I think it's been true about the Seahawks on the defensive side of the ball over the Pete Carroll era, which is why we've been able to consistently perform for years and years and years. I mean, with the exception of when Earl has been out in the past, and knock on wood, not when Earl's out in the future. We'll see how that goes going forward. But I believe in that philosophy nonsense that Pete Carroll spews out. Like, that to me feels true. Like, if you know what you're doing down and down, that's really good. Schottenheimer hasn't done that in his career. He doesn't have a strong philosophy that he can lean back on other than, like, yelling at dudes and losing the Civil War or whatever. but if he can lean into maximizing Russell Wilson's skill set, that would do wonders for this team. So hopefully that starts happening.
Yeah, and there's also the thing of Russell Wilson nursing a little bit of a hamstring injury too. And so, you know, that's obviously a factor in everything. But, yeah, I'm all for the Seahawks using play action. I'm a fan of this revamped running game. I think Chris Carson and Mike Davis both look great. The offensive line has looked as good as it has in years.
Yeah.
So shout out to them. I keep praising DJ Fluker, but, you know, that he's been one of their best signings. And it took him a little bit to get healthy, but having a guy that can maul people in the run game, he hasn't looked like a complete disaster in the passing game, which was the big knock of it, big knock on him coming in. So he's looked great. He's on a great deal for the Seahawks. And so I think that, you know, when you have these guys, a monster unit gelling and, you know, playing above average offensive line football, you know, that's great. It allows Russell Wilson to sit back and find a guy like Tyler Lockett downfield, or, you know, be able to have a little bit of running room himself. Now, that's a great thing. And so a good offensive line makes the Seahawks offense even more versatile.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, again, this is sort of the heartbreak of the Schottenheimer hiring, is that, like, the pieces are sort of there outside of the wide receiver position, and that's a guy you can go get next offseason. Also, by the way, we haven't been talking about Jerron Brown. Where's Jerron Brown right now? I think he should be. Was he hurt this week?
I don't.
What's happened?
I think you know I saw I mean? Him on the
it
field, but
feel
yeah.
Like the, we've like, yeah, like, this, where is he?
This was my worry about Jerron Brown, because you bring him in and you expect him to contribute to the team, but, you know, in Arizona, you didn't hear about him all that much. And, you know, that's a completely different, a lesser offense than the Seahawks have been. And, you know, that was my worry about him, that he'd be kind of phased out. But, you know, he hasn't really made a big impact, a big contribution, with the exception of that touchdown a couple weeks ago. And so, I guess we just have to play the Cowboys every week for him to be effective. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a great question of where is Jerron Brown, especially in a wide receiver needy Seahawks offense.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, anyway, all that is to say, like, we need some better weapons outside, or we need at least one more weapon outside. But you know, the pieces are there on the offense, including the offensive line. So that's exciting. And I think it's a good place to stop in terms of just talking about the offense sort of theoretically today. And we're going to be back right after one more break. And stay tuned. Locked On Seahawks, Locked On Podcast Network.
Guys, remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. It's BlueChew.com. It's blue, like the color blue. BlueChew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You know that they're going to get the job done. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready to go whenever an opportunity arises. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in discreet packages, so no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. All you have to do is pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to try it for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice. And we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. Welcome back to the last portion of today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are still with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman. And, you know, we saw a great performance hanging with the Rams from the offense. But, you know, at points the defense did keep them in the game. And they're going to have another opportunity against the Oakland Raiders. A kind of a better opportunity for them to show their talent, showcase, you know, their knowledge of the scheme, and showcase that they are able to stay afloat without Earl Thomas. And, you know, that puts an emphasis on the safeties, and that's Bradley McDougald and Tedrick Thompson. And, Spike, you know, you think that this is a big opportunity, especially against an Oakland Raiders team that loves to go with their tight ends.
Yeah. Derek Carr's number one receiver in John Gruden's scheme right now seems to be Jared Cook. He seems to be going that direction a ton. Cook has obviously been sort of an enigma over the course of his NFL career. We saw it with the Rams. We saw it with the Packers. He's the sort of guy who has all the tools but, like, struggles to put it together over a long period of time. Looks like he's starting to put it together this year in a pretty serious way. So it's a good challenge to see how the Seahawks do in the middle of the field. We're talking about a team that's not going to have Michael Kendricks, not going to have KJ Wright, not going to have Earl Thomas. What are they going to do about a Raiders offense that is funneling so much of their production through the tight end position? And it's something the Seahawks struggled with even at full strength in the past. I mean, Lord knows, we remember Cam Chancellor blowing coverage on seam routes in ways that cost the Seahawks potentially, you know, a much better season in 2015. So this is already a flaw in the Seahawks scheme, and now it's going to be exacerbated by weakness in the personnel grouping. So I think we're going to see this week the degree to which the Tedrick Thompson situation is going to kill us, or is it just going to wound us? If we can limit Jared Cook, or at the very least force all of their offense through Jared Cook, that's a good thing. If they're getting Jared Cook and they're getting the other things that they want and Marshawn's running the ball, we got a problem on our hands. So unlike the Rams, where you have a ton of excuses because Sean McVay is a boy wizard and will kill Voldemort one day, unlike that, John Gruden is Voldemort for all intents and purposes. So, you know, it's not a sort of scheme that's getting guys open. So can we cover guys who aren't being given free reign? Hopefully the answer is yes. I'd love to see Tedrick Thompson not be a garbage fire. We've already seen he's got some skills, especially as a hitter, that Steven Terrell never flashed when he was forced to be in relief. However, we have not seen him flash excellence the way Bradley McDougald last year when he was forced to sort of show up and play a significant amount of minutes first when Cam went down and also when Earl went down. So we don't know what we got yet. Hopefully this week gives us some clarity, and hopefully it's good clarity.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that Tedrick Thompson showed a good base of fundamentals. We gotta work on a little bit of the tackling. Just shore that up.
He hits, but he doesn't tackle. Like, exactly. It's weird.
And especially with the emphasis over the last few years of the Hawk tackling, maybe they just threw all that out of the window. They're like, Tedrick, we love your ball skills. Just fling your body at these guys in the open
they
field.
They should go and get that back out of the window. They should go to the window, get the Hawk tackle back so the Tedrick doesn't get us like 90 penalties this year. Just saying.
And while we're at it, show it to Delano Hill. Show it to whoever needs it.
Don't put him on the field. TJ Smith. Shalom Luani on the roster right now. What do you? I hate that Earl Thomas is hurt. That's anyway,
weird,
whatever. Sorry.
That's a weird use of a pick. But I think Tajik Thompson showed the ability to be a starter in this league. His upside, you know, it remains to be seen. But there's a good base. There's enough to work with to make the defense successful. And as long as Bradley McDougal is shouldering more of the load in the safety position, then I think the Seahawks will be fine. But, Tedrick Thompson's just going to have to work on the little things. For a guy with great ball skills, he's going to have to reel in those interceptions that hit him, albeit the ball was deflected before it got to Tedrick. But, he's going to have to work on the little things. But I like what we saw from Tedrick. I didn't immediately hate the draft pick like a lot of people did. I think that, you know, sometimes you're just going to have to wait for a player to get the opportunity. And, you know, good thing we have him because, you know, we're going to miss Earl. And, you know, hopefully he blooms into a great player. But for now, we're still in that development stage. And there's a lot to work on, but there's a lot to be happy with, I think.
Yeah, and I didn't hate that draft pick. I hated the Hill draft pick.
Yes.
And I stand behind that. I look, we're learning, and I'm learning about myself as I talk about the Seahawks four times a week, that I sometimes get fixated on draft picks that I don't like. And one of them is Hill, and we all know another one, and I'm not going to get into it right now.
Well, at least...
Because it's time for... No, don't make me do it.
At least the Seahawks didn't draft Ereck Flowers.
Oh, God, yeah. We didn't even have the opportunity to draft Ereck Flowers. God, they're going to trade him or cut him?
They waived him. They waived him.
Oh, it's done. It happened.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. And I'll say this. Jermaine Ifedi, I didn't hate the draft pick. I didn't love it. You know, it was sort of a schmedium, like, oh, it's a need pick. Be overdrafted by. He looks okay right now.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to jinx anything, so I'm going to, like, say it real quiet, but, like, Jermaine Ifedi's been, like, good for 3 weeks in a row.
Uh-huh. I don't know how to handle this, but...
We should just end the show. We should just end the show. Thank you for listening. Please listen to other podcasts on the Lockdown Podcast Network. Please use Blue Chew if you're having trouble in the bedroom. Please go to MyBookie to make bets. Please go to PFF to look up the stats. That's how we got to see those play action stats and be able to confirm what we saw with our eyes that Russell Wilson was a different player this week. And it's thanks to PFF. And thanks to you for listening. Tell your friends if you like the podcast, especially if the Seahawks start winning. It'll be fun to listen to because we won't be Debbie Downers all the time.
Yeah.
Great. Did I miss anything?
Yeah, just go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review, be as positive as we've been over these last two shows, and keep listening to the podcast. We definitely appreciate it. Spread the word, whether it be word of mouth, on Twitter, on Facebook, wherever you're at, you know, tell people about the Locked On Seahawks podcast. There's never a bad time to tell them about this podcast. Never. Any situation, any scenario, tell people about the Locked On Seahawks podcast.
Hey, you're at the bank, you know, you're depositing, tell people. You're in the grocery store, you're at Dick's getting some burgers. Tell everybody. Just start screaming outside of Dick's. Whatever it takes, do it. Yeah. Be a hero.
We can't pay you to do this, but we definitely appreciate it.
Obviously, we're not paying people. They should just be screaming for free. Yeah. Anyway, all right, on that note, let's end it.
All right, so for the Locked On Seahawks podcast, I'm Grant Goldberg signing off.
And I'm Spike Friedman, also signing off.